Welcome everybody to the Audio Files Podcast, a brand new show hitting the airwaves today, all about the music, the sights, the sounds, the stories, and the influences of the tunes we all know and love. Once a week, we'll be bringing you all the latest and greatest in music news, from headlines to this day in history, backstage access, studio documentaries, instruments and technology, artist bios and interviews, music trivia, and much, much more. Our aim here at Audio Files is to be the audio headquarters for music lovers by music lovers. My name is Levi. I am one half of the show, and joining me here in the studios,
Sam, and I am the other half of the show. And today we have all kinds of awesome stuff to talk about, everything from Android singing in an opera to the ever-changing face of the music industry today.
Yes, and particularly one of those things that has been a big deal here recently that we found out is that there has actually not been any platinum records released in 2014 to date.
Correct, which means no records released in the U.S. this year have gone platinum, meaning how many is that?
I believe it was 800,000, wasn't it?
For an album, it's 1 million. In the United States, million. Yeah. So you have to release an album this year and have it sell 1 million copies before the end of the year in order to be certified platinum. Nobody's done that this year. That's the first time since 1991 when they first introduced the SoundScan system. This is the first time that that's ever happened, which means things are changing. Things are happening.
Right. Yeah, a lot of that we'll be covering in this episode. We'll go ahead and start off by talking to you guys right now about a little bit of music history.
This week in music history, October 20th, 1977, a plane carrying members and crew of Lynyrd Skynyrd ran out of fuel and crashed in Mississippi, killing six people, including three members of the band. The relevant track on this week's playlist is Jacksonville Kid, the last recording made by the lead singer Ronnie Van Zant. So, on to our main topic, the platinum album. As we mentioned earlier, platinum albums means you've sold 1 million copies. If you can just imagine 1 million of anything, that's a lot. And if you can imagine 1 million CDs stacked up, I have no idea how high it is, but it's probably to the moon and back or something like that.
That'd be an awesome thing to figure out, actually.
How thick is an album? Well, it depends. Are you talking about vinyls? Are you talking about CDs? Are you talking about your MP3?
Okay, oh, that's true, yeah.
But I was tipped off of this both by an article in Forbes as well as deathandtaxes.com. According to the RIAA, which stands for Recording Industry Association of America, there are not any albums that were released this year by American artists that then sold 1 million copies. There were albums released last year that have turned platinum this year, and there are albums such as Frozen, which are a soundtrack, which has reached platinum and probably will go multi-platinum by Christmas season, it being a Christmas Frozen-themed soundtrack. But this is a very new and different thing because of the ever-changing face of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
The trend now for most people is either streaming your audio online, you go to Pandora, Spotify, something like that, or you could pirate it, or you could get on on iTunes or Google Play Music, whatever you use, and you buy just that one song that you really like, or maybe two or three songs. You're not going to spend $8 to $15 on a whole album when you only want to get that one hot track that's been playing in your radio all summer. So it's been kind of a different world now, and I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
It's been interesting to me. I've heard a lot of talk about this here in the news recently, just because there are a lot of services coming out. I know, for instance, just real recently, Google Play bought Songza.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually going to be changing up their whole music algorithm. They're another service like Spotify. You pay $9.99 a month, and you get all kinds of streaming services, as well as access to your own library, which is new. You can upload all your own music and listen streaming, the same as if it was online. But it's really been a game changer, because this means that just the era that we live in, people are going everywhere, people are on the move, you know, people don't have time to sit down and consume an album like they used to back in the day. You know, people would wait for an artist to put something out, and then they would, like, actually go buy that album. You know, we've talked in the past about you know, people just listening to that one single that comes out. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can tell it's a single because it's, right. You know, it's totally manufactured. Everything about it is just kind of plasticky sounding. But then the rest of the album that comes out is the artist. Mm-hmm. Like, it actually sounds like their music. You know that this is what they wanted to produce versus what the label is trying to make them produce or something that they had to insert, you know, to sell records. Mm-hmm. That's changing. All of that, as we've seen here, this is totally huge news for anybody involved in music industry at all. The fact that we've gone 9.5 months, nearly 10 months now, it's almost November at the time of this recording, October 26th, and it blows my mind because the fact that there have not been any single albums produced this year in America that have sold 1 million copies or more, we are in line for one of the biggest shifts that we've had since... I mean, the music industry has kind of come around.
Yeah.
The fact that everything's going digital, everybody's all into the one-hit singles, you mm-hmm. know, the timing that people release stuff. Even major events now are causing, you know, changes. I think of, what's his name? Five for Fighting? Mm-hmm. When he got popular, you know, that whole event came about because of, like, we were talking about, you know, a New Year celebration that somebody mm-hmm. heard him, and yeah. that kind of launched his career, whereas he was just, you know, a bystander. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that more in a different episode, but just this one specific topic of talking about no albums going platinum this year is kind of mind-boggling. So mm-hmm. I'm interested to see where it goes even in the next year here because of people like Google, who's getting into the market now for streaming, you know, right. after seeing Spotify and, of course, Pandora, they've always been there. But I don't know. I mean, that's just a really different spin on music. And I know a lot of people have talked about it here in recent news because a lot of labels are kind of freaking out because they can't drive those sales, you mm-hmm. know. And so, I mean, that's kind of my opinion on it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, well, you look at a big company and they're trying to... That's where they make their money. They make money off the singles, but when you buy the album, you're paying, you know, $1.99.
It's $1.99 the physical media.
Versus, yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, is the whole idea of if you do buy something anymore, you're not buying the physical media. You're not right. buying the cassette. You're not buying the vinyl. You're mm-hmm. buying a CD even. You're buying a
storage
piece of information.
Space.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously that's been around since iTunes and even slightly before that, but it's really, I think... We're reaching the crest of that wave of, okay, this is now the new norm. People are no longer satisfied with going into a music store. Mm. Yeah, there are music people out there, music audiophiles like us, you know, people who just want to go get the vinyl or whatever. But that's becoming so few and far between that these industries are going to, these companies are going to have to shift and change the way that they advertise, the way that they manufacture. I mean, you think about just jobs, okay? If you shut down a plant that produces compact discs,
right.
Because
yeah.
you know that's going to be hundreds of people out of work now, and so that's going to cause a shift in that region that thing's set up. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff like that that's going to be affecting the market.
It's an industry change for sure.
Right. I mean, it's going to have waves. It's going to have an effect. We're actually on the RIAA page right now. We were looking up to make sure this information was still current, and we did see there are three albums that have reached platinum, but they're not released in the American market. They're released in the Latin market, which is actually kind of interesting as in and of itself. That means that people in the Latin market are still buying albums, full albums, enough so to push at least these three into that platinum status. We've got Enrique Iglesias with Sex and Love, Santana with Corazón, and Romeo Santos with Formula Volume 2 have all reached platinum this year and were released earlier this year, springtime looks like, for most of them. But that says something, I think, culturally as well, that perhaps there's a difference there. I haven't had time to look in any kind of sociological information. But...
Right. Well, until I actually looked at this just a few moments ago, I had never really... I guess it's kind of the American thought process, you know, it's, you know... Huzzah, America, you know. Mm-hmm. But you look at this, you know, and the fact that the albums that are released in the Latin market are going platinum because they don't have access to streaming media like we do. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we don't have that, like, instantaneous, you know, the way to consume music. You know, whatever you want, like, it's on demand right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, because of that, it's driving a whole new business standard for us here in the States. Mm-hmm. In the fact that, you know, people want this right now, wherever they're at, you know, that's pushing, you know, your 4G LTE. Those
right,
are constantly
right.
trying to expand, you know, mobile apps.
Yeah.
You know, people will literally, like, throw a fit if your app does not work the way they want it to.
Right.
Where, you know, the same with streaming, you know, I mean, if people want to have that high speed in rural areas, you know, but because all of that is available to us, we don't think in terms of, like, buying something that contains 15 different songs when we're only interested in one.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a song on the radio and we're like, ooh, I really like that. I instantly want that right now. So I'm going to open an app, and if it's not available, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, 20 years ago where that wasn't, I mean, CDs were the new thing.
Yeah.
And they're becoming the new vinyl. I mean, they really are becoming that vinyl standard now.
I can't remember the last time I bought any CD.
Yeah, I was in high school at least. Yeah, you know, I mean, that was the last time I can remember buying discs.
It's so impractical. I mean, you think about, like, okay, I'm going on a road trip, and you get, like, the road trip mix you'd make on your CD.
Yes.
And you put everything on there, from all your different albums, and have to, like, load all the MP3s and stuff. But now, I mean, you've got all of that in your phone. You're like, oh, I need a playlist of everything I want to listen to. You don't even have to own that music on your phone. You can go to Spotify.
Yep.
Like, we make playlists on there now. You can just go and make a playlist of all the music you like and go listen to it wherever you are. Like you said, as long as you got the connection. And that right there, that whole idea of everything in your pocket, is pushing the industry in ways that they had not been pushed before. For example, like you just said earlier, you get in your car, you hear something, you're like, hey, this is an awesome song on the radio. One of my favorite things to do, grab my phone, pull out either a Google search with the audio music recognition function,
right,
or pull out one of those other
Sound
apps,
Hound.
SoundHound, or
any
one of those,
yeah.
And you have it listen for 5-10 seconds, and you instantly know who this artist is, what this song is. They'll even have links where to buy it.
Where you can get it.
Yeah. And that right there is changing it. Like, that's a whole other level of integrating into the music, because now you are now connected into that music, into that artist, and that sound instantaneously. Like you said, you don't have to go to the record out store and say, hey, dude, what's hot this summer? You know, what can I get a hold of that's the big thing right now?
Right. And that's putting pressure on labels, as well as musicians, artists, producers, the whole gambit. And when we come back, we're actually going to go ahead and talk a little bit about how Pandora is now trying to combat that by inviting musicians backstage with releasing its analytics soon.
October 25th, 1967, In and Out of Love by The Supremes was released, which subsequently became the American Bandstand favorite the following summer.
So on Wednesday morning, Pandora announced the launch of AMP, which is the artist marketing platform, a free service that now pulls back the curtain on the widely popular streaming service and gives musicians access to data on who is listening to their music, when, and where. This article goes on to say things like how the music has not been, the sales have not been great for, this year, which, of course, not having any platinum albums really hurts the music industry as far as, producers and actual labels. But what's interesting with this is that as Pandora hopes to lure musicians backstage with their analytics, we're starting to see where the money is really going to.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about just a little bit ago how, there's something to be said about the physical media. The artist, everyone kind of knows, I'm sure they've seen a lot of the infographics online where the artist actually only gets a small slice of that pie.
Very small slice.
There's a lot of middle managers. There's
A
lot of people in the labels who are getting paid. And now the quarrel is over royalties for the online music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
People are like, okay, who's getting the cut out of this? Because all of a sudden you have a lot of these middle managers who are scrambling to keep getting paid because now they're no longer necessary.
Yeah, they're not relevant.
Yeah.
They're not necessary at all.
And that's becoming an interesting conversation because as musicians, what they're all about is really getting the music out there for people to enjoy. That's really at the heart of, for most people making music. That's what they're all about. They want people just to be able to turn on their tunes and be able to just listen and enjoy good music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they could pay their bills on hopes and dreams, I'm sure they would, because then they would be a perfect world. But unfortunately, rainbows and unicorns don't exist.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to still make money. We got to keep this thing rolling. So we're just kind of going through this article here, and it's been an interesting read, just the fact that as we're coming up on the end of this year here without turning those fiscal profits for these big companies, how everyone's reacting to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's funny. If you hear from any kind of music industry news, they've been painting this in such a bad light.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that's all coming from that corporate mindset. And I mean, not to get all like super anarchist here, but it is. I mean, the man, you know, it's coming from that angle of, hey, this is going to be bad for our corporate profits this year. Yeah, that's great. But nobody cares. I mean, really, except for anybody who's in that company.
It's better for the consumer.
It's better for the consumer, but it's much, much better for the musician. Because the musician can now say, like with this, for example, they now have an opportunity to look up, okay, where am I popular? Okay, everybody in, I don't know, Portland, Oregon loves my music. I've never been there, but I guess I better go tour there.
Do a tour, yeah.
I'm going to do a massive show because everybody there loves me. Right. So now they're going to be able to see that. And with the advent of all the internet stuff coming through for artists and musicians, and this is not just music. I mean, this is actually... like taking a step back, this is part of a larger overall shift for anyone in any kind of artistic endeavor, whether they're an artist straight up, if they're a musician, if they're doing like some kind of video cinematography work. They have both technology becoming cheaper and more available. They have services that are very cheap, very available, very helpful online for different people. If you check out the blog post I made earlier, there's actually a I don't know if I linked to it on there. I should post it on there if I haven't. But there's services that hook you up with studio musicians. There's online. I mean, you can find all kinds of stuff. And that's making life a lot easier for musicians from the ground level who have nothing. They're starting on level zero. They don't need to go make some sell your soul to the devil giant contract with these mega corporations just to get their music out there. They can now go in their basement, in their backyard, buy you know a couple $1,000s worth of equipment, and then have a studio and make something and, you know, spread it out to the world.
Well, the technology has really changed the face of all of that. Like right. You were just saying, a lot of these artists can now actually do that and do well.
Mm-hmm.
They can buy equipment and they can have all their technology set up. The reason why people had to have the studios back in the day is because these people had the equipment. They have the tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars of you know, time and money invested that this was a space to come to record versus what we can do now. I mean, people produce, you know, sound quality stuff for people who want to put stuff out there. You know, if you want to go to Amazon and buy soundproofing for your room, you can do that. If you want to buy, you know, audio equipment that, you know, is of the level that these studios carry, you can do that.
Yeah.
You know. But now, combining that with the power of analytics, part of this article mentions that Pandora reports more than 76 million listeners that tune into Pandora for an average of 20 hours each month. In June of 2014, this year, that amounted to 1.6 billion listening hours.
Wow.
That is leveraging power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all due to technology. Yeah.
Right.
When you combine all that with being able to find your niche and exactly where you're hitting your market, that is absolute gold. Or platinum, should we say.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that changes the whole face of the industry because now the artist has access to the data.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not the big companies.
Not the marketing guru that's telling them, you know, what they need to do with the next show or whatever.
And that's going to change everything about how people are coming on the scene. Look at the change with MySpace, even just a few years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention.
Colby Calais, you know, started her entire career on MySpace. Never, you know, went that whole route with everybody, you know, doing the middle managing thing. You know, she's had an interest in that now because she's gone, you know, to the big VMAs and everything else. But that was not, that's not what she believed in. She believed in the music and it's reflected, you know, in her sound.
And there's several of those stories. You look at Owl City.
Yep.
We were just talking about him the other day. I mean, he started out just making music in his basement, put it online. People started liking it, and suddenly now he was the next big thing. I mean, came on the scene. Well, I mean, and that's even how was found, Justin Bieber. Online doing YouTube covers of something or other. Somebody saw him, said, "Hey, we need this kid up here," you know, and that
You'll
whole
have to forgive us for the Bieber mention.
You can tell we're not super fans, but anyways. There, that whole idea, though, of taking, I can almost, I mean, this sounds kind of a weird analogy, but I almost think of it like an audience with the king type concept, where it's like, unless you had that super big thing that would put you in front of him, he has no time or reason to deal with you. You're some peasant fool. But if you, suddenly, he's watching YouTube, and you're showing up in his feed, and he's like, this kid's actually pretty good, you know, I want her to sing on my next album, whatever. Suddenly, you're getting in front of these people. I mean, again, we were just talking about that whole face-to-face aspect. You got these social media. You got Twitter, you got
direct interaction.
What's that new one you're on? Feedly?
Feed.
Yeah,
P-H-E-E-D. Feed, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, of course, Facebook, you know, you have all the standards, but you're able to interact almost directly with these people.
Yeah.
Which means if they see the right thing at the right time, then, you know, they'd say, hey, you know, I want to work with you or whatever. You have collaborations going on that never would have happened just because they wouldn't have had time to meet with you.
There's been because of all this that we're talking about, there's been an interesting shift in artists now becoming their own managers,
right?
Which we'll talk about in the next section, lessons from Grimes on how she is actually managing not only producing music, but also being a CEO of several different companies.
October 26, 1911. Mahalia Jackson was born, gospel singer who sang How I Got Over in front of 250,000 people at the March on Washington in 1963. All right, next up we have an article I came across. I think it was actually a Reddit comment that pointed me to this article.
Which, Reddit power.
Yes, if any of you read Reddit, I love you, and if you don't, you should be reading Reddit.
Shame on you.
Anyways, but the article is actually an L, and it's called Boss Lady Lessons from a Pop Star. And it's not something I would have come across normally, but again, I was turned onto it by just some random person online. And it's actually a really cool article. It's about how Grimes is a CEO of both Grimes Creative Corp and Fairy Tour Corp. And she said, just started Rocco Prime Productions with her brother. So, in other words,
awesome.
She is not just a musician and artist and making music. At the same time, and in tandem with that, is a CEO, is running business, is doing business stuff. You think of the little meme with the guy, you know, in the little 80s suit, and he's just like, business! Like, that is the face, the new face of a musician. I mean, in the new era here, where we have all, like we talked about earlier, you have all these analytics, you've got all this stuff. Basically, you have the power to be all of those things that would take up a whole record company before. You've got all that in your pocket now.
Mm-hmm.
And literally in your pocket if you're doing it on your phone.
I mean, oh, yeah.
So it's again, it's just a whole game-changing thing. And this has been evolving for a while. I mean, like we talked about, some artists over the past 10, 15 years have been, you know, here and there spotlighting different aspects of how technology, internet, has really been changing the face of the industry. But I think, again, we're hitting that crest of the wave where it's going to be a continental shift within the next year or two where it just won't be done anymore.
No.
Like, if you go up to again, I know this isn't quite on topic for this article, but, for example, Kickstarter. There's an album that I supported that's coming out next month, or, well, month and a half from now. It's from I Fight Dragons, one of my favorite artists.
I Fight Dragons.
And it's completely crowdfunded. It's going to be coming out. And, of course, they set it all up really cool with album stuff. But they're able to make it exactly the way they wanted to because they split from the label. Everything is completely independent, completely down the line of what they wanted, what the artistic vision they had. And so they're in complete control of it. And that's the potential you have now with all this technology.
Let me make a note here to put Kickstarter down as one of our show topics, because that is really changing the face of the music industry.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about that until just recently. But something interesting in the article here, she's actually got a ton of good points here. We'll have all the links for this on our blog. We'll talk about that more as we get ready to wrap up the show. But something she says here is interesting to me. You'll never hear more people tell you that you're wrong than when you're succeeding. And even though it's been said 1,000 different times, 1,000 different ways, it still rings true that when you're out there changing the world, you know, if you're the one on the front lines, like leading the charge, everyone's going to tell you how we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. You can't change because it's not going to work. Or, you know, like, you shouldn't be messing with the system, you know. All of that echoes back to what we're talking about today. You know, the fact that there has been no platinum records. The fact that, you know, all this technology now is leading to more power to the artists, more power to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can choose literally in a moment's notice whether or not they want to keep listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the data is getting small enough now that they can actually see how long you actually listened to the song and whether you played through it all the way
or not. Was it a full playthrough? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of that is actually becoming important, especially to like Google algorithms and things, YouTube.
That's all they look at.
Yeah. I mean, if you are producing stuff and getting paid for it, they want to know for sure whether or not you're getting your message totally out there or if you're just getting a whole bunch of hits because your first 5 seconds are interesting.
Right.
You know, and that's changing the face of the music industry as we know it. I look at this, you know, like this is totally interesting to me. I actually heard about this on a podcast that I listened to. It's actually a French production, so unless you're an avid podcast listener, you may not be super interested, but it's kind of neat, just the ripples in the pond, you know, that effect that it's having around the world. This isn't just here in America.
Yeah.
People are catching on to this.
Right.
Like, hey, something's changing. We're in that shift point, you know, like you keep saying, we're kind of at that crest of the wave where it's getting ready to topple. And there's a lot of people who are trying to tell these people, no, you need us. Like, remember, we have all these connections. No, we have technology now. We've got, you know, again, the big three, you know, Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, all these things that are available, plus, you know, all the millions of little ones that are out there for artists to connect with their fans, you know, whether it's blogs, whether it's podcasts like we're doing here, all these new ways that are almost totally free for people to use to connect with people that they're wanting to get in touch with in the first place. That's why these guys are making their music. That's why they want to put this stuff out there for you and I to enjoy and to be able to do that without having to pay someone in the middle. That's game-changing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting how she's come out with this article just talking about how now that she's running companies as well as making music, you know, I mean, it really is kind of that combination of becoming that all-in-one powerhouse.
Right. Well, there's it's interesting, too, because she, of course, like he said, she's got a lot of points on here. We couldn't cover it all in the time we have, but she there's a couple things she mentioned that were definitely relevant to this. For example, there's a whole paragraph she devotes to being saying, hold on to your work, talking about copyrights and making sure that you get credited for anything you do, but also treating your collaborators with respect and give credit where it is due. This is one of those things, and of course this is a whole other topic we could talk about, but the whole idea of, okay, the music industry started probably early 20th century, that whole concept of copyrights and you got to credit this person, credit that person, and I own this music, etc., didn't exist like 150 years ago back. Mm-hmm. So in the history of human events, it's actually a fairly new concept, very new if you think about it. So that idea of I have the rights to this music and all that kind of stuff, there's still people who argue both sides of the fence. You know, we could argue back and forth about it if we wanted to. But it's something that you always have to take into consideration as an artist, as a consumer. You know, am I going to pirate this album? Why am I pirating it? Is it because I don't have the money or because I really don't care? Or, you know.
Or even if you don't want to support the big labels.
And, well, that's what I was about to say. I mean, a lot of times people will get into pirating because they're like, okay, my music, like you said, the slice of the pie going to the artist is so small it's negligible. And they've already been paid. They're not getting any more money.
Liberally is like, what, 2% mm-hmm. out of the whole pie chart or whatever it was?
Well, unless they have all the plugins for the rights for every time that song's played, all that kind of stuff, they got paid when the song was made, and that's it. Like, they had a contract, yeah. You get $10,000 to make this song, and then have a nice day.
Yeah, the company owns the rights to whenever a radio station wants to play.
Every time
those royalties go out, that's going to the labels.
Right.
That's not going to the artist.
And, I mean, that all depends on the specific contract. That's not a blanket statement. But it's one of those issues that you also have to take into consideration on both sides of it. As a consumer or as a producer of music, you always have to think about these things.
The next part that I thought was really good to hit on is something that everyone needs to keep in mind, especially as this is changing. Be nice to the people you work with. It's so important that she put this in there, especially someone of her caliber. And, you know, I mean, Elle Magazine, you know, all the articles. I mean, we're reading it. You know, I mean, it just shows the reach that these people have. And to put that in her interview, it's mm-hmm. extremely important because that really is becoming the shift that we're seeing that's driving this whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's a relationship-based, everything. I mean, not just that one encapsulating thing, but all of what we do in this life, whether it's creative outlets, whether it's business, whether you're just, you know, talking with a friend, you have to remember it's people that we're dealing with. And the fact that her, you know, as a business person, as well as a musical, you know, creative, to keep that in forefront, to keep that in mind of being nice to people that mm-hmm. you're working with, like, mm-hmm. that's all that's going to matter.
Yeah.
People aren't going to listen to you if they know that you're a jerk. Again, going back to Justin Bieber.
Right.
You know, his recent antics. Yeah, the kid can sing. I'll give it to him. Mm-hmm. He's got a nice voice. He's a butthead. The guy's a complete jerk.
Yeah.
And that's why nobody cares about him. Everybody just wants to see him get, you know, hit in the face by the next guy, you know? I mean, there's all kinds of parody videos made of him getting beat up by random people because people are just like, we hate you so bad. Like, you just, I mean, and that's because he doesn't treat people well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he believes that, you know, he made something of himself and so he deserves whatever credit he gets to his name. You know, and if you've earned that, you know, if you're the Eagles, whatever, okay, maybe you have, you know, some room. But again, if those guys are going and just being total idiots, you know, and being jerks to whoever, you know, they go rent a hotel and trash it, I guarantee you the owner of that hotel is not going to look at them in a good light.
No.
And keeping that in mind, that right there is the next currency for the next few decades. Like, whatever happens, I'm not calling any cards, I'm not predicting anything at this point, but we are seeing that shift in the music generation, the whole era, everything's shifting, and those relationships will be absolute solid gold. And that will be your currency.
More so than ever before, the transparency is there, too.
Right.
Like, I can go to your Twitter feed and see what you tweeted at your best friend yesterday, so you better be saying nice stuff, or else I'm going to know you're a total jerk, and then, you know, in the back of my head, I'm going to... perusing albums in, I'm gonna skip yours because I'm like, that guy's a jerk. I'm
that
gonna
gets listen to into music. The whole deal. Someone snaps a photo,
yeah,
you know, like, oh, somebody, so and so is doing this, you know. Are you gonna let it sit online 24 hours before you decide to reply and let everybody wonder, or are you gonna take to, you know, managing your business, your brand, your name,
your brand?
You know, that's totally, that's a whole interesting topic we could get into.
Because it puts a lot more responsibility in your hands.
It does.
As a musician.
You know, and that's the business side.
Right.
You know, it's nice that they're having that control, you know, that creative control over this whole aspect of making their music. But that puts that much responsibility back on them. And that's going to be a whole new game changer for these artists as the new music era emerges.
Mm-hmm.
However, if your artist is an Android... that may change the dynamic on exactly what it is that you have to do with your relationships there. We'll talk about that here in just a moment.
To Japan to bring robots even further into music.
Robots!
We have a Japanese musician and composer, Keichiro Shibuya, which I probably butchered. He is creating he's already done a virtual opera starring a computer-generated image of a girl, which in and of itself is pretty interesting. It was 2012. He's now going to go a step further with a show performed by singing androids made by leading roboticist Hiroshi Ishiguro. This is from an article from CTV News. They go on to talk about, of course, his life dealing with paparazzi, etc. But this, again, technology, the marriage of technology and music has always been a big deal. I mean, you see all the way from way back when the phonograph was invented, suddenly you have a new art form. Like, now we can record music and replay it. Instead of, oh, you have to go watch your favorite chamber orchestra live, now you can hear them in the comforts of your own living room.
Right.
That's
the
a big
only
deal.
Availability was live.
Yeah. And both on the production and on the distribution side of things, technology and the advents of technology have changed music. And this is just another iteration of that. This guy's taking the next level. There'll be only robots on stage, no human beings. It's a project planned for 2016. He likes to unsettle and stir up intense emotions with his high-tech creations. So we're kind of looking forward to that, to check it out. Hopefully it'll be somewhere online. We can at least listen or find some kind of video of it to see what this looks like. But... I mean, you've got, in Japan, they already have those Vocaloid performers that are all virtual holograms.
Same deal that this guy was doing,
They've got the, they had Michael Jackson and Tupac have showed up, virtual versions of them in America.
Yeah, that was crazy. I saw that not too long ago. They were all, like, holographic projections.
Yeah, and that's another one of those weird future tech things that's kind of affecting the that whole live performance. I mean, you've had people like the Gorillaz, for example, do the animated, you know, characters in their shows, but to do holograms and robots and all this stuff, I mean, that's like Walt Disney, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean level of production, and it's for a live show that you're only going to see that one time and they record it, but, you know, it's kind of a big deal. Like, they're making these live shows into just such an out-of-this-world experience, which is one of those few things that I have to say the music industry at large does well. When you go to a small town venue and with some guy playing his guitar at like a coffee shop, you get that intimate feeling. But there's nothing like when you go to the stadium and, you know, you have the giant speakers and somebody's on stage and it's just this massive show. Oh, yeah. It's a whole different world. And you get a lot different. I mean, the quality of the production in that you can only get from these companies that put all that money into it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that all turns out. Depending on how well all of this goes, mm-hmm. we may be able to go and have a live session to report back on how this turns out. It is 2016 when it's coming, so we will see how that all goes. On the other end of technology, we have a true audiophile's, what do we want to call it, a conversation or a debate?
Could be a dispute, depending on who's listening.
An article from Wired asks for everyone to please stop burning in your headphones. This is actually kind of a whole bunch of tech voodoo if you really actually get into the whole behind the scenes of this conversation. Basically, people have this idea. There's been a long time in the industry of people with microphones burning in, setting your audio qualities just right, and they're trying to extend that over now into your actual earbuds and stuff. And without going into too much detail, we'll post links for the article here, but without going into too much detail, it really is not overly beneficial whether or not you do or do not burn in your headphones. There's a lot of different controversy back and forth on this just because a lot of people don't understand the data. But that's okay because either way, people are making money off of this, so that's what's kind of funny about it. But it's kind of ambiguous and a lot of people don't have any way of finding anything out about this. But essentially, it doesn't matter one way or the other if you believe in it or not. I mean, you're not essentially going to change the way that the audio sounds. The only risk that you can have after burning in your headphones is actually blowing out your headphones. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Because that's one of the tests, you know, is to like play the most massive high volume thing that you can mm-hmm. to make sure that you get the diaphragms flexed mm-hmm. in, you know, to really get that true reproductive sound.
Well, that's I was going to say, for anyone who doesn't know what burning in your headphones means, that's basically is that idea of like your favorite pair of jeans, you had to wear them for a year and a half before they really fit your body.
And never wash them.
Yeah, that's the same idea that a lot of audiophiles have with their headphones, is that you need to, like you said, blast some music through it or just, you know, listen to it for a good 6 months to a year or however long you adhere to. And say, okay, now they're burned in, they're worn in, like now they have the best quality they can have.
Yeah.
And the article goes through talking about the pros and cons of even believing that because, frankly, if it's a piece of technology that's been manufactured to certain specifications, if it doesn't meet those specs, they're not going to bring it off the production line. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you have the emotional side of things and the whole, you know, psychoacoustic side of things where it's like, well, does this really, you know, sound the way it's supposed to and et cetera, et cetera. So it's a pretty good article to talk about,
though. Yeah, we'll post that up. It's definitely worth a read. Wired always does a very good job on this stuff. But essentially, they compare it to, you know, you might as well be kissing your earpiece 50 times to see what kind of sonic difference that makes for you. So it really is one of those kind of ambiguous things that we're just going to leave this here on the internet and let the internet argue about it. On the other end of that, Apple is actually going to be rolling out Beats Music, which they recently purchased or acquired, I guess is the buzzword. They're going to be rolling it into iTunes. Mm-hmm. They're rebuilding Beats Music and aims to roll it out next year as an iTunes feature.
Now, I used to have an HTC phone that had Beats Audio built into it. Went back when
oh, did you?
Back when they had with them. I think, the Resound. And, of course, any actual person who labels themselves an audiophile is probably already tuned this out as soon as we mention the word Beats, because Beats Audio is one of those pop sound qualities that only mainstream people want to listen to, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually, because basically what they're doing is creating an equalizer that makes the sound clearer and plus punches up the bass, et cetera. It's not like you're getting the true quality of the original music. However, most people are like, really, I don't care. I just want the music to sound good in my ears while I'm going running or when I go mow the lawn or whatever you're doing. You know, you want the music to sound good. And that's what Beats has made their money off of. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting seeing how Apple integrates both the Beats audio technology as well as this Beats music service into their iTunes platform. Because the Beats music service was not very large. How many people do they say they had? Just a couple hundred thousand.
It wasn't
250,000 paying subscribers as of May. So it's not very large.
You know, it's interesting, though, and I'm just talking from what I know about it. I don't know a ton about all of it because I don't follow Beats because I'm one of those people that's just like, no. But when iTunes Radio launched, that actually was a whole, like, going back full circle to what we've been talking about the whole show, they had to undercut a lot of their own sales because now they opened up a streaming service to stay relevant with Spotify and Pandora and Google Play Now and all these others. They started undercutting their album sales, their digital albums. So this isn't just affecting physical media. This is also getting into that realm of buying $15 albums on iTunes. Once they launched this, you know, to stay relevant, they realized, like, per quarter, they were cutting their own sales. And so they're trying to, apparently, according to this article, relaunch this whole next integration here to try and salvage, you know, what they can after launching that radio. They know they have to have it. There's no doubt about that. Like, we've moved into that era.
People want,
You know, we've already tipped past that part of the scale. That's what people demand. And there was a huge migration. I remember listening to this on a different podcast that I listened to, but there was a giant migration they were noticing in their actual quantifiable data of people moving away from their iTunes because there was no streaming service. And in order
I never listened to iTunes.
Well, in order not to get quote-unquote Netflixed, as they call it.
Yeah.
You know, the same situation that happened to Blockbuster and Netflix. They went, you know, away because they didn't stay relevant. And so iTunes is trying to avoid that. I mean, it's kind of weird. Everyone thinks of iTunes as like this colossal giant, you know, but they could just as easily be toppled by the small guys, you know, because here comes Spotify, you know, here comes Google Play and all these others who are now upcoming with streaming services. You know, if you take out the legs on anything, it's still going to collapse. You know, it's going to fall down. I mean, it won't stand on its own. So even if you do have a colossal giant like iTunes, if you have an old infrastructure built like that, people are going to leave. They're not going to, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the old scary theme parks, you know, unless they stay up to date and the safety codes are all there. I mean, if all these things are in place, you know, then, you know, they'll stay relevant. People will still come. But as we're seeing that transition, those shifts in the music industry, it's interesting seeing these big time companies that have been around for the last 15, 20 years, how they're having to adapt now with these smaller guys who are more agile and more mobile.
Well, and mobile is the key word there. Mobile is where everyone is at.
That is again, the new dynamic.
If it can go in my pocket, I want it. If it can't fit in my pocket, I'm probably not going
to
get it.
Do not have time to waste time or money on it.
Right, yeah. So that's definitely what we're seeing in the future.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this show, guys. Number of different things to talk about here as we wrap the show up. Several different ways you guys can get a hold of us. Sam, where can we find the blog?
You can find us online if you want to check out our new blog posts. We put up our playlist as well as just whatever ramblings we have for the day on there. That's going to be at audiophilespod.blogspot.com. And we're also going to have our playlists. So there's going to be a link there. We'll put links up everywhere. We'll have a Spotify playlist under us. A couple different playlists we'll have running, both for myself, Levi, and then anything relevant to the current week's show.
Yeah, so on Spotify, you can search Audiophiles. And that will take you to our homepage on Spotify, and you'll be able to find those playlists. I believe we have one that's called the Weekly Score. That will be where we post all the music that we talk about or just relevant to what we were talking about on the show. And then, of course, Sam's Lounge and then Levi's B-Side. That'll be just our own music listenings. We'll probably expand that as we go, too, because I know there's a lot of music that we like. And we're just audiophile type guys, so we're all about our music on there. A couple different other places you guys can find us. I know Sam mentioned you had a Facebook page for us.
There is a Facebook page for the Audiophiles Podcast,
And that's what it's called?
Audiophiles Podcast.
Audiophiles Podcast. And then on Twitter, we are at audiophilespod. That is our handle online. So just all over the place. If you guys want to reach us online or just email us directly, it's actually audiophilespod@gmail.com. I'm sorry.
Audiophilespod.
And I guess we should mention, just because we've been saying that word a million times, we actually do not spell it audiophiles like you would see correctly spelled. It's kind of a play on words, the word audio, and then files as you would see it spelled by itself. So audio, A-U-D-I-O, and then files is actually F-I-L-E-S. Mm-hmm. So audiofilespod@gmail.com, at audiofiles on Twitter. Of course, you can search Facebook for Audiofiles Podcasts. And just a number of different ways you guys can get a hold of us. If you like the show, we are going to be actually starting to branch out. We're going to be putting this on several different places. We're looking to be on SoundCloud as well as iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Several different places you guys can reach out to us. Don't have any of that set up quite yet. If you guys are listening to this, more than likely it will be on SoundCloud first. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for the next few episodes and we will be putting that all together. But for the time being, the social media sites are going to be the best place to get a hold of us. Any closing words from Sam the Man?
Feed your ears.
Feed your ears. I like it. All right, guys. Well, appreciate you tuning in. We are actually going to be setting up a Patreon here before long to just see if we can go ahead and keep the momentum going to keep the project supported. Sam and I are all about our music, and we'd love to bring you guys better content, better quality, just audio, even possibly some video in the future. Mm-hmm. Being able to have different access to services that we might not have access to right away without having some kind of an income. So if you guys like the project, if you guys like what you're hearing so far, stay tuned. You know, like you can give us ratings on iTunes or Stitcher. You can follow us on SoundCloud, you know, kind of push us up to the top there so more people can get involved. You know, leave us reviews, you know, connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, you know, all the ways that you guys can just push us up to the top. The more people we can get in front of, the better this project will be for everyone all the way around. So we're excited about that. Again, none of that set up right now. We're kind of just shooting straight from the hip on this one. But we're excited. And if you guys like what you've been hearing, then stay tuned. We're going to be bringing you much, much more of this here in the near future. So on that closing note, guys, thanks so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll be shooting back at you here in about a week. Thanks.